la religion.
Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. Thank you for listening. We would like to remind you that this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Known as just a silly boy with a feely heart. Please consider supporting the show. Check us out on Patreon or simply leave a review on iTunes. Here's your host and creator of the show, Known Wells.
Hello, feely humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. My name is Known Wells, and this is episode 112 with my guest, Christopher Swan, on celebrating what makes us different. Christopher and I talk about his coming out story, how we compartmentalize emotions, the humility in understanding that none of us are perfect, and so many other wonderful things. Christopher is doing really, truly awesome work in Accidental Information and My Big Story, and he's doing some coaching work now, and all those links are in the show notes for the episode. Check him out. He's at OhHiChristopher on Instagram and Twitter, and he is a delight, and I think you'll love him just as much as I love him. Before we get to the episode, though, a couple announcements, and I hope you don't get sick of me for announcing this, but it means a lot to me, and I'm deeply passionate about it, but the Feely Human Collective is now crowdfunding. It hasn't even been a full week. It started off January 15th, and we're at, let me look at the number, 18% of our goal so far, so it's going pretty well so far. It's exciting, and there's lots of amazing perks. So if you can go and support, please check it out. It'd mean a lot to me. The links are in the show notes to get to that crowdfunding campaign, as well as in my Instagram profile at FeelyHuman and at YumiEmpathy. Go check those out. Yeah, it's just, if you don't know what the Feely Human Collective is, it's a new mental health collaborative community. It's all about us. And so go there, check it out. There's a video you should watch about why I created the Feely Human Collective and why it means so much to me. And I think it'll mean a lot to you too. So go check it out. There are amazing rewards and perks like great pins and stickers and t-shirts. There's even a reward where you come and spend the night in our little guest suite above our garage, and we record a podcast of You, Me, Empathy, and we maybe snuggle with Scooby, and we go on a hike, whatever you want to do. Adventures with Known. If that seems like fun and exciting to you, go please, please, please check it out. Again, if you go to Feely Humans, plural, feelyhumans.co, it'll redirect there, but all the links are in the bio for Feely Human and You, Me, Empathy. Please check that out. It would mean the world to me if you support it. And if you can't support it financially, you can please share it out. Over the next month, I'm going to be talking about it a lot, and it's because it means the world to me. It's what I want to do in life, and I want to create this space for all of us to explore empathy and vulnerability and emotional wayfinding in our mental health and grow together, because that's what this pale blue dot is all about. Anywhoozles, that's enough about the Feely Human Collective. Let's get into this episode, this wonderful episode. Please also, if you can, write a review for You, Me, Empathy in Apple Podcasts, please do. Helps out the show, gets more ears onto this empathy stuff we're talking about, and it means a lot to me. And I read them sometimes, so please go there, write a review, and make sure to follow Christopher Swan on Instagram and Twitter at OhHiChristopher. And enjoy this episode, episode 112, on celebrating what makes us different.
La 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 la, you, 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 you,
Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a podcast about exploring the struggles we face in our day-to-day lives as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our mental health, our neuroses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, my joy can be best described as big because I'm here with life adventurer, story curator, and podcast nomad, Christopher Swan. Hello, Christopher.
Hello. I love that opening. Big. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I figure big stories. That's what you're about.
Yep.
Makes sense. So, listeners, we're here today with Christopher to get to know him. We're new pals, and so we're here to get to know Christopher and sort of his mental health origins and his kind of life story a bit. But before we do that, as we always do, let's do an emotional check-in. How's your week been, and how are you feeling right now?
You know, those are two different things. My week has been a little stressful. And right now, though, as I mentioned a little earlier to you before we started this, was I was feeling a little quiet and calm this morning. I think I did that purposely because it was stressful this week. And it was just little things out of my control. And I just needed a little, like, let me just take a breather this morning. It was quiet. I had an opportunity. And I'm thankful I did that.
It is amazing, and it's so good to hear that you found that quiet, because it is, you know, you hear about that. You hear people say, oh, just sit still, be quiet, you know, take time for yourself to kind of sit and be with your thoughts and the sounds of nature or whatever. And we know how powerful and transformative and healing that can be, but why is it so difficult to get there sometimes?
You know, I think in the heat of it, admittedly, it's difficult for me to be there. You know, I don't always manage stress really well, and I know that about myself. So if there's a lot of stuff happening at one time, it's hard for me to, like, you know, see between the things that keep coming at me and just to stop. And I just, it was quiet this morning and I didn't have anything planned specifically. I knew we were doing this. And so I think that was me purposely trying to say, okay, don't make it a crazy morning, because that's very me. I'm a little on the go a lot. And so I think it was just an opportunity because it unfolded. So I guess what I see that as is maybe you can't in the moment slow down, but take the opportunity when it happens.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice. Yeah, being more, I mean, that's kind of being more of a little bit more of like a passenger as opposed to a driver. I know for me, like I struggle with the concept sometimes of just like choosing all the time. You know, you hear like choose, and those things are valid, but I struggle sometimes with that idea. Like, I feel overwhelmed by it. I also feel frustrated by it. I feel anxious about it, you know? So, like, maybe being the passenger sometimes can be a good thing.
When you say choose, do you mean, like, the decision? Because I think there's something, what they refer to as decision overload. And
choose meaning, like, you know, I'm not putting anyone down or being negative about this, but like there's a lot of language about like choice and choose your day, right? And and those things are certainly valid, but I just feel overwhelmed by it sometimes because I emotionally sometimes that's a difficult hurdle to overcome, and you know, to your point, like maybe it's just there's just too many choices to make, etc.
I think there's a, I would agree with that about the, you know, choosing your day. That is true sometimes for me. I can. Other days I feel like I'm just getting stuff done because I just kind of have to be in the moment. Mm. And it feels a little bit like a luxury for me to like really sit and choose how I'm going to manage this thing. It's a better way to be for sure. But sometimes I just, there are a couple deadlines. I got to get it done. And then I will just think about it afterwards. Mm. And then that thing I was speaking of, like the decision overload, I think one thing about starting your own business or being an entrepreneur or anything you want to call yourself, if you're doing something that's really creative or you're in the driver's seat all the time, you have to make decisions constantly. And after a while, you just max out and you don't want to make a decision. And I think that's where a passenger can come in. Hmm. Because I just, you know, like I'm overloaded on that. I don't want to make one more decision. It's kind of like this, that I hear this from couples as well. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. What do you want? Because at the end of the day, and I think some of that is, I just don't care. I just want to eat and hang out. Like I just, because yeah. You've had a full day of being in charge and doing these things. And so, I don't know. I think those things all are connected in some way.
You're absolutely right. And I think the dinner choice example is a great one. I definitely find myself in that sometimes for sure. Mm-hmm. And I ask it, I think, with the hope that Jessica, my partner, will just make a decision. We'll just say, like, just help me out here.
I think a lot of us do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned that like you're kind of an on-the-go type of person. Have you always been that way? And where do you think that comes from?
I have always been that way. And I think it comes directly from my mother. Mm. I can relate it to her. It's definitely, it's a family relation. I don't know if it's behaviorally, like I've learned it or... Truthfully, it feels like it's always been my DNA. I've always been, like as a child, I was referred to as hyper. All okay. of the time, yeah. Which was never said in a nice way, by the way. So it was never said like, oh, he's so hyper and that's so great. It's more like, you need to calm the hell down.
Forgive me, but like that is the context I know hyper is, it's like a negative context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, but that had blossomed also into me having a lot of energy to do things and wanting right. to do stuff and trying things. And it also was part of my curiosity, you know, always because I find myself to be very curious and I've always been that way. So I think that reflecting on like in my family and my mom, she's the same way. I always think of this example. So I grew up in this... like it was like 2.5-story old Victorian house. And we didn't have a lot of money as a kid. And it needed to be painted. It would, and my mom's like, we need to paint this thing. It was peeling. It's gross. So she decided that she was going to paint it by herself, by hand, with a brush. And so they put scaffolding around the house. She scraped it. She had some help scraping it down by hand, by the way. And then she painted the whole thing by herself. And... that's just kind of how she was. I mean, she's still kind of that way. And that's a little my description. Like, I'm like, okay, let's just do it. And let's just do it all. And it's just, I think this, it just feels like there's an energy to try things. That's why I guess what it is.
Yeah. I mean, she sounds like a really great role model. Are you guys still pretty close?
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah, we're very, but my immediate family is pretty darn close. So I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, in what they call the North Bay, or a lot of people know it as the wine country, Sonoma, that area. And I moved up here a few years ago to actually be close to my family physically, because I lived in Los Angeles for like 16 years or so. And I slowly moved my way back up because I realized I was missing out on the physical connections I could possibly have with family. And I also thought at some point, how many more years will I have with my folks before they can't do a lot of things? Sure. So I should take advantage of that. Plus also the area is amazing. So I moved here purposely because we are close and how do I retain that?
Well, I mean, that's really, nice to hear that you have this close relationship with your family. Like, was it always that way? Have you guys always been sort of a close-knit, cohesive unit?
Oh, cohesive. That I would find different than close. let me break
that
down.
Okay, that's fair.
We have always been close and connected, but it wasn't always perfect. I mean, there's, you know, speed bumps in every, right, family and life. And we've had plenty of those as well. And I think, like, even my, like, teenagers were rough for me. I was dealing with my sexuality at that point. It was not, this was what the, this was like the late 80s and into the like early 90s. And that wasn't so progressive as we are today with the LGBTQ plus community and,
right,
and being accepting. And it definitely was not that in my immediate family, nor the surrounding area. And so that was a big riff for us. Like, in fact, I ended up moving out when I was 16 years old. And I didn't speak to my family actually for a while. And so that was actually pretty rough. And then, I mean, and actually even had a little bit of homelessness during that time, which most people don't know about. And if I flash forward though, through, you know, years, we've really worked on that and worked on our relationships. And my folks have really also really come around to being not just accepting, but so welcoming of different people. My sister's also out. And so watching my mom and dad learn to support us and our partners and our families now has been really welcoming. But that took real work and it took patience.
Hmm. You know, so at what age did you come out?
Well, it was different times for different people.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I started coming out to my friends, like I was 16 and 17 years old. And then I finally actually had a conversation with my folks, I think when I was 25.
Wow.
So it's a big gap there.
Yeah. And their initial reaction was?
Well, there were confrontations that we had when I was a teenager that didn't go well. And so when I finally actually had the conversation with them at 25, they were actually really welcome at that point. They said, of course we love you. Why would we never love you? And I want to jump forward just a little bit because this is an interesting reflection. And I totally laugh at this. As my sister was coming out, which was more difficult, I think, for my folks. And I want to speak for my mom and dad because maybe they feel a little differently. But I believe it was a little more difficult for them because they had some expectations about having the only girl in the family, what they expected. Mm. But at that time, my mom also said to me, well, Christopher, it just wasn't that big of a shock with you. I'm like, why? They're like, I don't know. You just did things that weren't always straight. And I was like, wait, what? Why didn't you tell me? This would have been so much easier. And you know, my sister, they were just surprised. Mm. So initially, you know, when I had that conversation at 25, it was, you know, it was a welcome thing. It still wasn't a big conversation. Like, it wasn't a regular conversation, but as I made this commitment to myself too, as I was dating people, that I would be open about that because I wasn't. And I felt like that wasn't fair to them. It wasn't fair to, like, I'm keeping this secret, if I allowed them to know about it, I'm still not allowing them into my life. And I wanted that. So I needed to face that fear and work through the awkwardness and uncomfortableness. And I think that's what I'm in about, the patience and the work.
Hmm. You know, do you mind talking to me about that period where you did leave the house at 16 and what triggered that? Was there any specific event or confrontation?
Yeah, my mother and I had a large fight and I can't even tell you what it was about. I'm sure. Maybe she could. But it was a bad fight. And, at that point, they wanted me to leave. And so I packed up all my stuff within, I think, the day. And I went and ended up at that point staying with my my friend's house, and I ended up, they actually had a second little house in the back of their property, which I ended up living with them for quite a while, actually. But as a teenager, when you're 16, you don't know anything, really. And, you know, so I'm trying to go to school. I wasn't being a great student at the time because I think I was just dealing so much with my sexuality and who I was, and I was being bullied a little bit. And so it was a really rough period for me. And trying to manage that just wasn't doing a good job. And so that led to multiple hopping around the different places to live. Remember, again, I was a teenager. And yeah. At some point, I ended up moving out of the area a little bit, and I didn't have a place to live. So I ended up making this friend, Rebecca, I think her name was. We ended up living in our car for a month and a half or so because we had nowhere to go.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that was probably a pretty good breaking point for me. Like this, so this is what I'm doing now. And at this point, I'm not talking to my family at this point. And so long story short, out of that, it was my brother that kept trying to get me to have a conversation with my mom and dad. And so finally I end up doing that. I don't remember the exact details of all that, but we end up having conversations here and there. And at some point I end up moving home for a while. And that finally gave me the foundation to finally like try to get myself back together, you know, like get a real job, you know, finish school, those sorts of things.
Yeah. And what did that look like? You know, cause that, I mean, 16 years old is a hard period of anyone's life, you know, and leaving and then coming back. And then where were you at emotionally when you were trying to, you know, when you sort of moved back and you're trying to kind of get your, you know, quote unquote act together, get a job, all that stuff, like coming to terms with your sexuality and your identity, like that's a lot of stuff. Like where were you at emotionally?
I think I was compartmentalizing. I think mm-hmm. I got really good at that.
Sure.
And I believe, you know, going back home, I was able to, you know, kind of straighten things up, you know, and figure out like, or at least having some, that, like I said, foundation gave me a platform to think a little more clearly and figure out what I wanted to do or what was next. So I think I compartmentalized things like, well, I won't talk about my sexuality because that means I have to face all of that.
Hmm.
And that means I'd have to talk with the family. And it was already been really rough with the family. And, you know, so I was carrying that burden on my own. And, you know, but I was still that energetic, hyper kind of guy. So I was still like, well, I want to do things. I want to try things. So I think I compartmentalized those things where emotionally I was good in some areas and other parts I just, you know, I didn't work through or deal with. Like even just, you know, growing up being bullied a little bit in school. And I wasn't drastically bullied, but there was definitely moments throughout years of that. And that was always usually toward my identity, you know, if I was, because as a kid, I was a little bit flamboyant and I was definitely not the guy's guy. And like, I got along with the cheerleaders, not the football players. Like that's kind of the story. And I definitely got picked on for that. And so I just kind of, I think, repressed that. Like being gay was bad. Of course, so I'm not going to deal with all of that. Like I knew I was gay. I was acting on that, but I wasn't going to work through being comfortable in expressing it with all of these, like my family. So I think that's why 25, I finally was like, what the heck am I doing? I had a boyfriend at the time. I didn't think it was fair to him to not live openly because I was with him for years. And how do they not really know our life together? So it finally, I think, caught up to me at that point where I said, wait, I have to be me.
Yeah. And I mean, gosh, I think that's such a hard, I mean, coming to terms with that. I mean, identity is such a mind fuck, right? It's really a hard thing to come to terms with, especially as a teenager. I mean, even into our 20s, identity is such a thing. And I know like how important it is to find, when we're establishing our identities, to find other people who we sort of associate with identity, to get feedback on or advice or just like seek solace. Did you have any of that other than your boyfriend?
I had that in friends for sure. Cause
that's
great. I was fairly open with all my friends.
That's good.
And for the most part, they were all very accepting. It was only a couple people here and there that weren't. Interestingly enough, maybe 2 months ago, one of those friends chatted me up on Facebook and apologized for everything she had said back then, which I found like, was like, oh, this is something you read about. That's happening to me right now.
But, yeah, wow.
Yeah, which I thought was a beautiful thing. So I did have those friends that, you know, united around, like, you know, being who I wanted to be. I think ultimately, and I know this is true because I've been in therapy for years, that I never really dealt with all of the be who you are. You know, there was still some shame and guilt and all of that stuff. Even when I had that conversation with my folks at 25, it still was progressive for a long time. And so it's interesting how those things that can happen to you as a teenager, of course, can stay with you for so long and show up in different ways. You know, the way I would act or the way I would behave or the way I would show up with people, which is actually, I don't want to jump too forward, but that's really a lot of why I do what I do today about celebrating what makes people different, because it all stems from, you know, my roots. It all stems from feeling marginalized, feeling discriminated against, and holding in all those feelings and then letting them show up so many different ways. It's a horrible thing. There's nobody should have that.
Absolutely. 100%. I'm wondering, like, you know, maybe I already know the answer to this, but like, the childhood, the sort of house you grew up in, you know, you not talking about your sexuality. Did you talk, was it a house where you talked about feelings, emotions? You know, what was that sort of conversation like?
You know, not really. It wasn't really a touchy-feely family. Not that my folks didn't love me. I've always known that. And my mom is more, I think, she's probably more of a feely human than my father is, or he was back in the day. I think he's more feely today than he was then, but I think that's progression for people.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a, let's talk about our feelings a lot. Mom was always listening though. So I think when we were younger, it was easier, but when it got into more those teenage adult kind of identity things, that was different, you know. And when you're older, you can reflect on more of the reasonings for those things. And one thing I think about is my folks got married very young. Mm. And they were literally teenagers themselves. I think my mom was, she was 15 and my dad was 16 when they got married.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow, that's young.
And they had my brother at 16 and me at 20. So they were kids themselves. So what do they know? You know, that's a big piece of it. So, I mean, as a 16-year-old going through things, I didn't think about that with my folks. But, you know, as my mom reminds me, because especially with the kids in my family, and she's like, you know, you do the best that you can do, and that's what you strive to do and be the best parent you can. So I think that's when I can reflect on that. That's what they were doing as well.
Hmm. That's really beautiful. I think you're looking back with such compassion, which is, I think, not always easy.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I think it's because of the closeness that I have with my mom and dad.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, mom and I talk about this stuff now. So it's, you know, we can have those kind of touchy-feely kind of sort of great conversations, which I really enjoy and love. And that's like, part of that reason of moving here was to be physically close. So I could just hang out, you know, on the afternoon and hang out at their place and we just, you know, have a barbecue and chat a little bit. So I think that's why I'm able to have that compassion and reflect back and just really get down to the root of these things. And also, I think there's some humility in understanding that none of us are perfect. And yeah. I clearly am not that. And if I can realize that about myself and realize my faults, then gosh, why can't I give other people breaks? You know? So I think there's learning in myself. I mean, I'm in my 40s now. So, you know, I've had some time to figure out some of this and lots of therapy.
Well, listen, old man. I mean, just kidding. I mean, I think that's all correct. I think recognizing that we're all flawed is very important. But for me, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, for your family and your parents, like, you see a progression there. You see that they've grown. You see that they've made efforts. And I think that's a really crucial component of it. Mm-hmm. You know, because, like, for me, like, looking back on my childhood and you know, the way my parents were and are, like, there's less of that and mm-hmm. sometimes none of that, right? And it's in that case, it's much more difficult.
Yeah, I can see that and understand that. And it's true. It's, if there wasn't a progression there, then I wouldn't be in the same experience or have the same beliefs and feelings that I do today.
Yeah. So on the feelings front, when did you really start to kind of really explore your feelings in therapy or out of it?
I think it's maybe, it feels like it's two different things for me. I've always been kind of a feely person. Mm-hmm. So even if I compartmentalize things, I've always felt things deeply. Like I feel like I belong to this sensitive people club.
Yeah. Like you and me both.
Yeah. Another thing that people say usually, with a negative spin. And I think I've always been in that way. So I've always kind of been aware and I'm trying to understand them, but within therapy gave me the place to really explore how behaviors connected to feelings mm-hmm. and vice versa, like, or how feelings drive behavior and understanding patterns and all those different things. So I think it gave me, I felt like, the education to know more than just what they were and that I had them. And like, I always felt like it was okay to feel certain ways. I don't, maybe not as a teenager, but as I got older, I felt strong enough to say, no, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I don't know if I've always felt like I wasn't alone in that. And therapy helped me with that as well, to know, like, oh, that's actually normal to feel that way, air quotes. So maybe therapy was really kind of the open door to really, really explore the depth of them.
And when did you start therapy?
When did I start therapy? I think that was in 2002 or 3 or something like that. Something around there.
Okay. Yeah. Are you still in therapy?
I'm not right now. My therapist finally retired. Which I cracked about that. 'Cause, like, you can't do that. Like, we're connected here, my friend.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, we'll probably need to talk a couple sessions about how you feel about this. I'm like, clearly we will. And interestingly enough, because he was a therapist in Los Angeles. So when I moved, I actually kept doing that with Skype sessions with him. And that was actually a really great bridge for me it's because I had a lot of change for multiple years. When I moved out of LA, I moved to Silicon Valley or the peninsula, and it was a brand new job, new location. I didn't know anybody in that area. And then 2 years later, I ended up moving to the North Bay, which is another like 60, 70 miles north. New place to live, different jobs. I changed job like 3 times, I think, at that point too. So there was a lot of change. So it was important for me to have some consistency, and the therapist was it. So he retired and I haven't found a new one yet. I've actually been exploring that right now because I think it's, it's actually been kind of a rough year for me. So I realized that I probably really need somebody to help me work through what's been going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that same thing happened to my partner. Her sort of longtime therapist retired, and she didn't go to therapy for a while because of it. Because it's like, you know, finding a therapist, as we always say, is it's like finding, they're not our friends, but like, it's like finding a friend. It's like creating a relationship, and it's hard work, and you know, you have to be compatible and all that stuff. So
much. And it's even thinking about it, I'm like, oh, I know I got to get to that. And did they take my insurance, or if not, what's the payment?
Oh my gosh.
It's all, so I find, yeah, I know. Yeah. I've had that in my head because I've been to therapy in a while. So yeah. I'm there with that.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to, where the listeners may not know about you, Christopher, is that you used to work at Disney,
mm-hmm.
Which is very exciting and very cool. Tell me about that experience and then kind of like why you left that, you know, this very sort of, this job that you presumably loved and was in this for this company that's great and working with very interesting and creative people. Like, tell me about that experience a bit. I'm very curious.
Sure. So I worked for Disney for over 15 years, and I worked in multiple capacities. That means in jobs and different segments of the company. So I actually started my Disney career working at a Disney store as Christmas help. I was the greeter at a Disney store.
I can see that. I would walk into a Disney store if you greeted in front of it.
And you know what? I loved it. I had a day job. I had a full time job at a in an HR organization at another company, and I went on some like extra money. So I thought, I want to do something that's kind of easy. And I thought, oh, those people that greet you at Disney store seem so easy. I'm going to totally do that. And you know, funny thing, when I got there, like, oh, you could do the register or whatever. I'm like, that's enough for me. I just want to talk to people. How about that? Hmm. And they hired me on to stay on as a part-time employee after Christmas help was over. And I was so excited about that. And I ended up doing that for like 2.5 years. And then I ended up getting a job at one of the corporate offices for Disney in Los Angeles. And so I won't go through the whole trajectory, but I moved around in multiple areas. Like, so I worked for the Disney stores corporate office. I worked for the studios. I've worked for corporate Disney and multiple entities there, all over. And so I did a lot of different things there. I was in their HR organizations. I've even did a little bit of like IT help desk stuff. But I eventually really landed in communications, internal communications for them, which I spent quite a few years on. And that was really about managing or creating communications for all the cast members around the world. And that allowed me to really be creative and do things that were a little like different and fun. And I was also in a group at one point that was under the radar. So I got to really kind of be a little on the edge and do things that weren't typical things that we would do. Like, for example, I created the first internal web series for Disney cast members. And that was all because like somebody from ABC News loaned me a little camera one day and said, here, why don't you try this? I'm like, okay. Which I also starred in, by the way. I was the talent as well. Nice. And which that's like the creativity piece. Like, it was air quotes Christopher Swan. I played a character of myself that went on these crazy adventures around the Walt Disney Company and did all these funny things that would also then instruct you and bring you news and whatever. So it was really a magical place to work at. Now, I've also had like one of my worst jobs in my career was actually at Disney as well, which I just worked for a horrible boss, but I've also had some of my best jobs and beautiful, amazing, smart people there. The culture was very interesting. It's very different depending on where you work. When I worked at ABC, it was very different than working at like the Disney store. But I also had these like crazy Hollywood magical moments, you know, where my office was in the ABC building at one point on the studio lot, and where my window faced over the lot. And so I'd watch them film like Pirates of the Caribbean with Johnny Depp floating in the sky, or watch Jennifer Garner riding around for Alias. Like, all those scenes from Alias were in the garages, were actually in the garages of my building. So it was like, there was like really crazy things, you know, like I met Matthew Broderick there once. That was one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life. I walked through the set and I had to stand right next to Rob Lowe and Calista Flockhart on Brothers and Sisters. And I was like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So all wonderful and great. I felt like I grew up there as a career because I moved to LA when I was 25. And so, I really was a young guy learning the ropes and building my career. I eventually left because it was just time to grow. It was like, I wanted to do more. I wanted to go faster. And Disney is not a progressive or aggressive career track. You go and it's a slow turn. And it was so much fun. This woman that I just really was kind of my mentor and adored, and I really worked with her for a while at ABC, had moved on to another company, and she had brought a couple other people. A job opened up, and she's like, I think I'm going to create this thing, and I think you would be great for it, Christopher. So I decided to follow her and really see what I could learn outside of that organization and under her watch.
Thank you for sharing that. What strikes me as interesting about the sort of internal communications piece and you sort of leading that charge is that's a lot of that is about connecting with others and making connections and, really kind of celebrating humans and really kind of making people feel seen and valued, which I feel like is very much what you're doing today in the work you're doing.
I would agree with both of those statements. And I think it's a natural progression for me. I stayed in internal comms for quite a few years. And in fact, I was actually starting to really like, it's not like tooting my own horn, but it's like, I started to like really make a place for myself. I was speaking at conferences. I keynoted a conference in Australia. I've done like some cool things in this internal comm space. And it was because I really found like I was connected to, I felt like I was really serving. I was helping people. I was helping them thrive in the jobs that they had. And that felt super important to me. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I felt like it was my people at some point. Like, I'm like, oh, this is it. This is what I'm talking about. And also I love marketing and branding stuff, but not like the cheesy, gross commercial stuff, but more like creating stuff that's beautiful and interesting that really grabs people. So for me, I felt like it, I got to tell stories and I got to do all this great creative work, which progressed me into where I'm at today, which is really kind of doing the same thing with maybe a little different angle and in doing it from, instead of telling other people's stories, telling my own stories with other people with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so your kind of platform is about, and it's beautiful. It's about celebrating things that make us different. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, like you're sharing your story here. Let me turn that around on you. Like, what do you think makes you different, Christopher? Like, what really kind of makes you a unique person in sort of leading the charge on celebrating mm-hmm. others and their difference?
Well, let me first say that what makes me different is what makes everybody different. It's everything that makes you who you are. And so when I talk about my experience earlier, coming out as a gay man, when I was 16, being homeless for a while, going back home, having, difficulties with family, coming back together, being bullied, having this weird career trajectory from the Disney store to, running internal comms for multiple groups at Disney. Like, you just layer them on. Every little piece that comes to your life is what makes me different. It's not just because I'm part of the LGBTQ community, because also if you look at it on the surface, I'm just some white guy that lives in the Bay Area. Well, that's not very special, on the outside. But there's so many things that make us different. And I think this, the way that I see things, the way that I feel things, my unique experiences. My dad grew up milking cows when he was 15 when he got married. Like, that's my heritage. And so I think, like, you take these small little things, you add them all up, and that just makes you so unique and different. And the way that we show up is those things. So yeah. That's how I see myself. It's all those little ingredients. Some are bigger than others, and some are small.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, like, I think it's such an important distinction, because I think we get caught up in wanting to be, quote unquote, unique, right? And mm-hmm. like finding what makes us unique, and like, you know, going on external adventures to validate that. But the reality is, as you're saying very eloquently, is that the adventures are inward. those are the adventures where we can really see and start to accentuate and accept and show others what truly makes us different, because we all very much are unique, because we have all these unique experiences. We don't have to have some grand adventure. We don't have to, like, you know, go eat, pray, love. And one can do that, and that's beautiful. But, like, we don't, you know, I think societally and culturally, there's this almost like seemingly unattainable vision of what makes us different, and like we have to reach this level of uniqueness before we're valued. But as you're pointing out, very importantly, is that we don't need that. Like, what makes us important and valued is our unique differences and our unique experiences.
Yeah, you know, you know this because we chatted about this before, and I've been working on some kind of educational materials to help people see that. And the thing I really focus on is it's taking all the things that you love, that you like and love, like the things that you're deeply passionate about. It's adding in your values, and it's adding in all of your experiences. And once you kind of figure all of those and put those all together and really understand and kind of break them down, it helps you see. It's almost like it's a translator to help you understand that, oh, all of these things equal this. This is what makes me different. So it's almost like it puts it in plain language for you. So that's because I think you're spot on that people think like, oh, I have to have this grand adventure, or I need to be unique, so special and different. You see it with people online. Like, you know, they're like, they're so different because of this and this and this. Well, okay, great. But everybody's different. Here's the real truth. Because we're all so different, it actually makes us the same. That's the beauty of it.
Like, darn right.
And which I love. And that's like, that's the secret formula. But we've all been taught that same is really like, it's almost being, I don't know, same
average.
As like average or normal.
Yeah.
You know, it's the, oh, you have to like this music. You have to behave in this way. Well, no, you don't. Those are society norms that have been created that don't really apply. So I'm here to break some of that down.
It's awesome. Well, and the sameness piece, like, I think, is another just crucial component, because it's connecting, right? Mm-hmm. It's reminding us that, like, we're in this together.
And that's so true. And I actually, the thing I usually follow with when I say I want to celebrate the things that make us different to create a world where we all belong. And I think that's the sameness part. That's the, when we realize that we're all different, then we're the same, then there's room for everybody. Because there actually already is. We all just don't know it yet.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, inclusivity is a huge part of this podcast and the community I'm trying to build. And it really takes, it's really just a mindset shift, mm-hmm. you know? It's really just kind of looking at the world in a little different way.
It is, and especially how you see yourself in it.
100%, yeah. Yeah. So when, you know, on this platform of celebrating things that make us different, like when we, and I, you know, this is for the listener's sake, like when we learn about what makes us different, and when we're connected to that and seeing that clearly, what does that do for us?
I think it really, it focuses, well, it opens up your life, really. Because when you see those things, like, I'm trying to help people apply that to their life. I say life and work most of the time, but life really can incorporate that. So what it does is it helps you build better relationships because you know who you are. You really, truly understand who you are. You like yourself. You know what your values truly are. You know where you want to place yourself, what kind of situations you want to be in. So it also gives you purpose or helps you define your purpose. It helps you understand like, oh, I really care about this and this is where I want to put my energy. It allows you to focus on the type of work that's important for you, you know, versus I'm just doing a job. Maybe you do just want to do a job because your real focus is family or whatever you're doing. But it allows you to kind of put those things together and to really feel like there's purpose and meaning in all those things that you do. And so I think it's a way of like connecting your heart and mind with the way you show up.
Hmm. I love that. And how does that translate into, you know, for instance, like your big stories, my big story podcast, like tell the listeners about that a bit.
Sure. So, all of this idea that I came up with was on a walk I had one day and this little marshland park that's kind of near me. I had this aha moment where I was like feeling a little lost. And I thought, oh, other people must feel this way. Oh, I don't have the answers at the things I want to do. I wish there were answers. And I was like, oh, there are answers out there because people have figured out. I should go interview these people and figure out what these answers in life are like. And so I started this podcast, My Big Story with Christopher Swan, which it's a little bit of an evolution, but today what it really stands for is speaking with uniquely amazing people that are celebrating who they are just by doing what they do. And so I, with the podcast, I now travel to each person, no matter where they're at in the United States, and I sit down with them either for an hour, for two, for a day, and I learn about what makes them them. And usually it's something around, you know, it's focused on a big purpose or something that they're doing as well. So, you know, there'll be like, there's a gentleman in Alabama that I interviewed who's this immigrant from Bermuda who is in college here in the US. And he started this nonprofit to help senior citizens, people with disabilities, single moms, and veterans help maintain their yards because they weren't able to do it. But one step further, he brings in children from the community that are maybe a little bit on the edge of not having a good experience in school that need a mentor. And he brings them in, and they're the ones that actually do the service. And it's free for the recipient, and he helps mentor these kids. Well, he started actually chapters around the United States. By the way, he's doing this while he's in school.
Wow.
And it all started because he saw somebody on the side of the road, this older man that had a hard time pushing the lawnmower. So he just pulled over and started doing that. And he was like, I wonder if I could do this. So those are examples of people that I go and interview, and I want to spend the day with them. And like, his name is Rodney Smith. And with Rodney, I actually spent the day in Alabama mowing lawns with him because I wanted to see what it was really like. So my big story is, it's kind of a meta story. It's really, you get to hear my actual experience of me leaving that corporate space, doing this new, creating this space that I'm, this platform I'm trying to create. So you get to actually hear my adventures on the plane, on the train, wherever I'm at, mowing lawns. And then you get to hear the person's story as well. So the goal of all this is actually to help inspire people with new ideas and help bring those new ideas to life. To celebrate like these things that are different and these people are different, that you can be different as well. And maybe it'll spark something for you.
Hmm. I love that so much. It's so beautiful. What do you like? I love the idea of really finding what we are about and why we're different and unique in the things that we do. I like that idea because it's intentional, right? It's not necessarily flashy. It's like this is a stirring of my heart, and I'm going to pour it into this action. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, you know, I love all that as well, but I also believe that it's been profound for me to do this. You know, I've done it for a few years now, and I initially started with remote, and then I just realized I was doing them in person, and I decided that in person was so much better. And there was a full experience thing that I could have. And I realized that experiencing how they're pouring these things into what they're doing, even by just being who they are, that it helped me kind of reshape myself. Like I think I kept calling it a gift when I first started really doing this. Like, it's such a gift to experience these things and meet these people and see how they show up and love their life and love the world. And so it's been all that for me as well.
I love that. That's so cool. I feel the same way about this podcast. It's very humbling. It's very ego reducing. It's very inspiring because I see, as you see in my big story, you see how other people live. And I think that's it's a thing that's said over and over again, right? Like this idea that we need to experience others. We need to experience differences. We need to experience different cultures and different modes of living and different frameworks of looking at the world. And I think that's 100% true. And I think that's valid in what you're doing and valid in what I'm doing, in that we are putting ourselves into experiences where we get to experience, we get to meet people where they are and let them be themselves. And in the process, like, they're sharing their story, but we're also getting this wonderful benefit of like inspiration and like insight into like, wow, this is, I didn't think about it that way or what have you.
You know, it's also turned into an education component as well. I mean, of course you can feel inspired because most of the people I'm speaking with are doing some really cool things. Mm-hmm. But I can't help but remember there's this woman that actually used to write the show notes for my show originally. And she was through a service, so I didn't hire her specifically, but she came through the service and we ended up chatting and just, she was lovely. And I ended up meeting her in person one day when I was actually on a trip in Oregon and I was interviewing somebody up there and she lived nearby. So I did a little meetup and a few fans and people got together so we could all meet. And I found out more about her, that she's actually a Mormon mother and has multiple kids. And so we are definitely on different spectrums of how we see reality in this world and religious beliefs. And then I had my first episode of season 2 come out with Mandy, which was, she's a transgender correctional officer at San Quentin Prison. And, you know, that's a really different story for many people to hear. And a lot of people aren't familiar with a transgender point of view or in their story of coming out. And so she listened to that. And she had written me and said, she was so thankful to hear that story because she would have never really normally heard that. And it really helped her to think about how she raises her kids and to make sure that her kids know people like this and know these kind of stories, because we all matter. And I was blown away. And first of all, I just adore this woman now. And we even had a little nice chat yesterday about how different we are, but yet we find that so special. Mm. And so I think that's why it was fresh in my memory today that, you know, I hope to inspire people, but you know, hopefully I can bring awareness, because I really try to make my guests, my diversity pool, I try to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah.
I think you can just see that by looking at the you know, the roster of folks I do. And a lot of that comes just because I want to learn or I want to share, and I want to give a platform to the voices that we normally don't hear. That's a big piece of this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want it just to be the Caucasian guy that's written a book that's marketing it around everywhere that everybody knows. I want it to be like, you know, with the drag queen you've never heard of, or, you know, like that kind of thing.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's so honorable, and I commend you. I think it's good work you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what, in addition to My Big Story, what other kind of work are you doing? I know you have Accidental Information and that. Tell me a bit more about that.
Sure. So when I started this, I started a company called Accidental Information, and that idea was to create a platform, like a space that I could put all of these ideas that would help people celebrate what makes them different. So My Big Story, that was the initial first vehicle or medium that I created. And I really started that because I thought podcasting is easy and I'll just start quick. I didn't realize that it is easy, but it's not easy to be really good. So that took a while. So I still created this platform. That's where the podcast lives. I then started to put articles on there as well about more like advice and almost tangible advice to help you either be the person you want to be more creative, create more self-awareness, all those things that kind of come together. And so the idea is still to continue to grow that. And so we just, as part of Accidental Information, has a collective, which is like my fancy word for saying podcast network, because I don't really love that. And so we brought over a new show that's not run by me. That's an independent creative that comes over and he's joined the collective. So he's under my umbrella, a brand, but he still owns his show. And that's called Good Humans. So we just actually just did that just over 2 weeks ago. So he interviews people that are doing good in the world that can help us learn how to be better humans in the world. So the idea is to grow some of that, continue the articles, continue different types of shows, be it podcasts and web. And then what I'm really working on, I've been working so diligently on, that's taking me so much longer than I thought, is the educational component to help people celebrate what makes them different and then apply it to life and work. And so that will be a membership-based education piece, which has two layers. One's like a little bit more, you just want to dip your toe in because you need a little bit more inspiration and you need a little bit of like spark to help you see stuff. And then the next layer is, you know what? I got all that. I want all that. And I actually need some real help to figure out how to translate all this and apply it to either my career, my small business, my creative life, and just my life in general.
I mean, I'm so proud of you, friend, because I, all of that is so, it's such beautiful work. And it, you know, if I'm going to put the mental health lens on it, like finding, figuring out like what makes us different and thinking about like our uniqueness and our identity and like what we're about and how our experience shape our identity and how our experiences, you know, make us different. Like, and the inclusivity of it and the all of that, like that is such a huge component of thinking about mental health too, in that we need to do that exploration we need to explore our feelings. We need to explore these aspects of our identity, you know, whether, you know, you are diagnosed with some disorder or whatever. Like, I think those components of identity and exploration and individual, you know, seeking and mining, like, is such a huge part of this. And it's why I wanted you on today, because I think that component of it, whether or not you are like specifically exploring mental health and mental illness, I think it's very important to think about our mental health with that framework.
I completely agree. And in fact, I do actually want to focus on mental health a little bit. Like, so it's not really my specific space. Like I don't feel like I can be, I mean, I can be somewhat of an advocate for it. It doesn't feel like my expertise space, but I believe there's a real space for that. Mm-hmm. So I've even carved out, like, even in the articles, like, I haven't really said this publicly yet, but I've created a space where we can actually have contributors. So I haven't really marketed it. It's all available, where I want people to be contributors to writing articles for us. And I would love to actually really blow out the mental health space as well. And I would love to see maybe a mental health podcast on the collective and those sorts of things. I think that's so important, because I know that I've struggled with my mental health, you know, here and there as well as just how to have better maintenance and growth with it. So yeah. I know it's important.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. You know, and like I read about things like, I'm sure this is near and dear to your heart, I read about things like, obviously there's a stigma around mental illness, and then adding to that, like, the stigma around LGBT communities, you know, and the statistics around, like, higher risk of suicide for LGBTQ plus teenagers and things like that. Like, those things just really, I don't know, just pierce my heart and make me just so much, like, I want to reach those people and I want to connect them and make them feel like we're in this together, you know?
I agree. And especially within the LGBTQ plus community, when you're in it and you really start to understand it, we're really not one united community. We are when it comes to, like, June and it's Pride Month and we see rainbows everywhere.
Yeah.
But the truth is, there's other parts of the community, like queer people of color, or mm-hmm. Or trans folks, like those two groups especially really need better support and help. And yeah. Because, like, so, you know, I'm not a believer, like, you know, everybody has their own story, and not one story is better or worse than the other. But I also know that as a white gay guy in the Bay Area, life is a lot easier for me than a black trans woman who's maybe living in Alabama.
Absolutely.
So yeah. I really believe there is such a need for those sorts of components of support, education, all of those things that come together. So I would love to be a part of that. And because to me, it's almost like, how do I use my privilege to make things a little better?
Yeah.
And if I have an opportunity to do it, then it's, I shouldn't just do it. I feel like I'm required to do it, because it just feels like it's what's in my soul. Like, I need to help.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think being mindful of our uniqueness and what makes us different is being mindful of our privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm really just love what you're doing, Christopher. It's really great work, and I hope the listeners see that as well.
I appreciate that. It's been kind of a dream to do it. I mean, not to say that it's not tough work. This is something I always tell everybody as well. Like, you want to follow a dream, you should do it. Just know it's not unicorns and rainbows. But it's so fulfilling and so meaningful to be able to, you know, try to, I think, give back and help and serve and try to make the world better.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Well, let's start wrapping up here. Let's talk about Empathy Heroes. This is the part of the show, listeners, where my guest and I talk about someone in our lives. Could be a character from a book, could be a character from a movie even. Just someone who is a great empathy hero, someone who inhabits a whole great deal of empathy. I will go first to give Christopher a moment to think on his empathy hero. My empathy hero this week is Truman Capote. So one of my all-time favorite books is Other Voices, Other Rooms by Truman Capote. It's his first novel. It's tremendous. It's like, he was just one of the best writers ever. And I'm going to read a quote from him that I just really find beautiful and really spoke to me. He says, quote, "Did you ever, in that wonderland wilderness of adolescence, ever, quite unexpectedly, see something, a dusk sky, a wild bird, a landscape, So exquisite terror touched you at the bone. And you are afraid, terribly afraid, the smallest movement, a leaf, say, turning in the wind, will shatter all. That is, I think, the way love is, or should be. One lives in beautiful terror, end quote. And I love that because it just speaks to, I mean, first of all, just the love is not an easy thing. It's a brutal thing at times, and it takes work, and it takes a bit of the bright and the dark to be kind of one and beautiful. And so, So I just love that quote, and I love Truman Capote's writing. And listeners, if you haven't read any Truman Capote, do so. He was a tremendous gift to the literary world. So that's my empathy hero. How about you?
I think mine's more, this makes more sense for me too as well. I am impacted by people that are in my life. Sure. I can't help but think of my friend Jenny. I've known her since I was 18, I think, and we've had just the craziest memories and stories together. And we moved both out of the area that we grew up in within like a year of each other. I moved to Los Angeles. She had moved to Maui, where she still resides. And through that time, she has become probably just like my empathy hero in so many different ways. And I think when we talked earlier about feelings and about exploring feelings and understanding them, like she's been on that journey with me and she's been doing her own journey at the same time. And so the in-depth conversations and the understanding and the empathy that I have received has come so much from her. And we haven't held, like, that distance has not created any barrier for us. And as time goes on, it gets deeper and better. And so it's beyond more than just a friendship. Like, I know that she can help me see and understand things differently and can also empathize in the, you know, adventure and travel I've been, especially over like the last, you know, year. Like I said, it's been kind of a funky year. And so anyways, I think it's definitely that dear friend of mine that has felt more like almost as a sister, really.
Aw, thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Well, Christopher, where can listeners find you and connect with you online?
Sure. Well, you can either go to accidentalinformation.com to find all the different resources I talked about. And then if you want to find me online, I am, as you know, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, and I'm at the same handle, OhHiChristopher, O-H-H-I Christopher.
Lovely. Well, Christopher, thank you so much for being a guest on You, Me, Empathy.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's been an honor just to have the conversation and talk about all these things in my past and where I'm at today. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, you're very welcome. And to you listeners, I'm here, you're here. We're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other. It's You, Me, Empathy.